This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on assignment. Multitasking is a part of modern life. Every job requires it, whether you're a waitress taking orders, serving the food, getting the check ready, or a talk show host listening to guests, taking phone calls, reading emails, and IMing with a producer. The assumption is you can and do multitask. In fact, whether at work or not, a lot of you are probably doing more than one thing right now. Maybe talking on your cell phone or having a bite to eat while driving to your next stop. But just because it's a fact of life doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. And the research is starting to pile up. We are really wired to do one thing at a time. Later in the hour, saying no to teens in a tight economy, Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson will join us. But first, do you multitask? Does it work for you? Tell us your story. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org, and you can also comment on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And joining us now in Studio 3A is NPR science correspondent John Hamilton. You may have heard his series on multitasking from Morning Edition. The fourth and final installment of the series will air on October 30th. John, so good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
And John, we are going to start with a question or a call from a listener. We're going to go first to Sheila. She's in Arizona. Hi, Sheila.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Well, I thought when this topic came up, it just grabbed my attention immediately because I feel as if my life is multitasking from the minute I wake up until the minute I go to bed sometimes. I have two kids that are 2 and 4 and run a small wealth management firm. And I don't think that I could really think of a time in my day when I'm not doing at least two things. Even when I go to the bathroom, I'm catching up on the paper.
And do you feel like you're doing them all well? How do you feel about that?
The part I feel like I may suffer is with my children when I'm trying to either, you know, for instance, last night, try to do an activity workbook with my son while I'm also trying to listen to the debate. I feel like he's not getting my full attention and I'm not paying attention to the debate fully, but I'm getting a little bit of both, whereas I would have had to sacrifice one or the other.
All right. So, But you don't see this changing in any way. You're going to keep on having to multitask, right?
Well, we just don't. I don't think that we have enough time in the day, most of us, to do everything that needs to be done. So, in order for me to, I think, perform at my best level, I've got to try to find ways to fit more in. Whether that's emailing someone while I'm on hold, or returning my calls when I'm driving home from work, so that I don't have to be on the phone when I'm with my kids, or doing two things at once has just kind of become my life. But I have to say, it's very exhausting, and I'm interested to hear how it may be affecting me in ways that I don't even realize, just besides the exhaustion I feel at the end of the day.
All right, stay tuned, Sheila, because we're going to tell you. And thanks for your call.
Uh-huh.
So, John Hamilton, there we have it. That sounds like modern living. People struggling to get everything done in one day, they have to multitask. What's wrong with that?
Well, I mean, I think Sheila sounds like a very typical busy parent. And multitasking is something that seems to, as she said, have become a part of modern life. And what she alluded to a little bit is that you pay a price for it. It's not that you can't do it. You can have one ear on the debate and the other on your kid, but you can only focus on one of those things at a time. And so, for instance, you're either not going to remember something that was said during the debate because your focus was on what one of your kids was doing, or your kid is going to say something and you're going to realize they said something, but you're not going to know what it was because you were busy listening to that sentence from one of the presidential candidates.
Well, what does the research say about this?
What the research says is that really the human brain is designed to do one thing at a time, to do things sequentially. And we can kind of fake doing several things at a time, but it's a real stretch. And I mean, it's in a way, it's sort of a tribute to the human brain that we're able to do it at all. But what we're doing is putting one thing on hold while we shift our focus to the next thing, and then we're switching back. And every time you switch, there's a little bit of a lag. You lose a little something. It takes a little bit longer to get your brain back where it was. So for Sheila, for instance, every time she switches from attending, focusing on what's being said in the debate, and goes back to something her kid was saying, there's a little you know, there's a half second where her brain has to get out of president mode and get into kid mode, and you lose something in that.
Do you think most people really are kind of honest with themselves about this, or do you think there are a lot of people who are kidding themselves and thinking that they can do this?
Well, certainly from the scientists I talked to, they seem to be unanimous that people fool themselves into thinking they're much better at this than they actually are. And when you actually put people in the lab and make them do this, it's really easy to get people to screw up in ways that they probably are not aware before they go in that they would screw up.
Yeah. Well, let's get someone to join us now who has done some of this research. Daniel Weissman is a professor of cognition and perception at the University of Michigan. He's joining us from a studio on the campus in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you.
Maybe you can explain a little bit more about what is happening in our brain when we are trying to do one, two, three, four things at the same time.
Well, I think that John's point is well taken and reflective of a lot of research, which indicates that we really can only focus on one thing at a time. There are some studies showing that sometimes it might be possible to divide our attention between two things. But for the most part, what's happening on our brain is that we're switching back and forth between two different things.
And so that means what in terms of you're doing one task and then you move to another one? You really just can't complete what you've just done, or you can't do it well?
Well, it sometimes means that while we're supposedly performing two tasks at the same time, much as Sheila kind of mentioned when she's driving home and she's talking on the cell phone, we think that we're kind of performing these two tasks at the same time, but oftentimes we have to switch our priorities between these tasks. So, for example, if Sheila starts to get engrossed in a conversation on her cell phone, she might stop attending as well to the road in front of her.
Right.
In fact, some research at the University of Utah that David Strayer's lab has been doing shows that talking on cell phones while people are in a driving simulation results in reduced attention to the road in front of them. They have less memory for, say, billboards that kind of went by during the simulation. And even shows that driving while you're talking on your cell phone is kind of like driving drunk. There's a lot of commonalities there where people are much slower to respond to things that happen on the road when they're both drunk and when they're talking on their cell phones.
You know, I think that's an idea that a lot of people would just resist. Not everybody, but there are some dedicated cell phone talkers who just would absolutely refuse to believe that that's true. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the actual research you've done? I know you've done an MRI experiment. Maybe you can explain like some of the work that you have done in this area.
Well, I've been doing some functional MRI studies looking at what different brain regions contribute to attention in general and to this ability that we have to switch between different tasks. And some of those studies indicate that giving people advance preparation to switch between tasks sort of allows the brain to prepare and to therefore perform the task better. So this is actually a study that Helene Slagter and I and other colleagues, including Marty Waldorf at Duke University, performed. And we just showed that different parts of the brain became active when subjects were instructed that they would have to switch to a new task in the near future. More recently, we've been doing some work here at the University of Michigan, which tries to look at how brain activity and even communication between different parts of the brain relates to our ability to switch quickly between tasks. The idea being that more activation or communication between the different parts of the brain that enable us to switch attention should facilitate or help us to switch between different tasks.
All right, we're going to take a call now. I just want to remind our listeners that we're discussing multitasking, and we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. And we're going to go to Alan, who is in Fresno, California. Hi, Alan.
Hello.
Go ahead.
So, like the others, I have fallen victim of the same trap, and I am on lunch right now, on the phone, preparing for my next class or preparing my notes and cleaning an instrument. And I was wondering for your guest if what kind of results he found psychologically. Like, I kind of start to feel bad or less efficient if I'm not multitasking, even though I've noticed that if I focus on one subject, I always do much better.
Uh-huh.
And I'm much more successful. Like, I'll notice if I have three tasks to complete, if I try to do them all three, takes me maybe 10 minutes, but if I go 1, 2, 3, it might take like 7. But it's the feeling I have when I'm multitasking that I'm more productive, especially I'm a music teacher, so the environment that I work in is highly progressive, and the products that I'm expected to get, they're just difficult day to day a lot, and I don't know, I just feel like I'm doing more. I feel like I'm...
Well, let's get a response from Professor Weiss, because I think this is really interesting what Alan is saying, which is that really he prefers to do one task at a time, but the expectation now seems to be that you should be able to do more than one at a time.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that oftentimes, I mean, it's funny you say you're a musician because I also play the trombone. And when I was growing up, I would always be doing homework and I'd have some sort of music on in the background and the television without sound on, you know, at the same time.
Yep.
And somehow I just sort of felt better doing that, even though, like you pointed out, I was slower because, in fact, I was dividing my attention and switching it back and forth between these different sort of, you know, sources of stimulation. I can tell you that psychological research has shown that when people have to switch back and forth and they try to do these multiple things at the same time, they are in fact slower. Like you said, it would take 10 minutes for you to do three things at once as opposed to 7 to sort of just do 1, 2, 3 in that order. So that's a big finding. As to why it is that some people prefer to do, mm-hmm. you know, three things at a time as opposed to only one, I'm not really sure. I think just very speculatively that there's something about being stimulated in multiple ways that's challenging. And so maybe if you're a person who likes to be challenged, you might enjoy this type of overstimulation, if you will. But I don't actually know precisely what governs this preference that people seem to have.
All right. I think we're going to get more into that after a break. John, you wanted to say something quickly. If you
can. Well, the caller raised the question of stress. And actually, Dr. Weissman's colleague, Dave Meyer, has done the look at air traffic controllers. And one of the big problems for them, they're ultimate multitaskers, and they burn out.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for your call, Alan. And we're going to continue this discussion about multitasking in a moment. Do you multitask? Does it work for you? The number is 800-989-8255. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about all the ways that we multitask at home, in the office, behind the wheel. And to get a sense of what it's like to drive while distracted, check out our website. We have posted a video of a driving simulation while doing two things at once. That's at NPR.org. For the past several weeks, NPR's John Hamilton has been digging up the facts on multitasking. Can we really do 2, 3 things at once or do them well? John Hamilton is with us. Also, Daniel Weissman, professor of cognition and perception at the University of Michigan. Do you multitask? Does it work for you? And I think I know the answer to the first question for sure. Tell us your story. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. Our email is talk@npr.org. And John, what we're hearing from everybody is yes, of course, I have to multitask. I mean, is that just the way of the modern world? And, you know, so if it isn't, if we don't do things as well when we're multitasking as we do when we're doing things one at a time, what should we do?
Well, the neuroscientists I talk to say that, like almost everything else, you can learn to do things better. People who multitask a lot seem to get better at it. It's probably task switching, but they're getting more competent at it. So, you know, you can say you can practice, but for a lot of people, the answer is probably to try to eliminate some things. And you talk about the modern world, and a lot of the multitasking we do has to do because things sort of invade our world. Our cell phone goes off, an email comes in, the instant message is there. And you know, we don't have to respond to all of those. I think we often do, but we don't have to. Maybe saying no is part of the answer.
Well, there's an email here I want to raise because it gets to something I want to talk about. This is from Bob in Rochester, New York. Young people who have had to grow up with dealing with multiple streams of data and information seem to have an affinity for multitasking. Scholar Linda Stone calls it continuous partial attention, where our attention is attuned to one item, but we can scan other things we need to attend to peripherally and make a shift with putting our attention to another item. If something significant happens somewhere else, and then the other items become peripheral and are scanned. I hope all that makes sense to all of you. Could it be that young people are adapted to be better better at this than older people, and that this will become something that we evolve to be able to do better than today. Professor Weissman, how about that? I mean, are we going to have to, are our brains going to have to change and adapt to a new set of circumstances, which is technology, which is only accelerating?
Well, there's no question that technology is accelerating, and that all around us we are multitasking all the time, essentially. And all around us are these distracting things, cell phones, Blackberries, text messaging on cell phones. I mean, there's just so many things that we're trying to do at the same time that I think we're being pushed into a situation where learning to be good multitaskers is actually a very rewarding thing. It's interesting that you were talking before about what people can do to sort of improve their ability to multitask. It actually reminds me of some studies that Daphne Bavelier and her colleagues performed at the University of Rochester. They actually trained people to play video games. And what they showed was that after people were trained to play video games, their attentional abilities on a wide variety of standard laboratory tasks, including tasks that required some switching between different mental sets or tasks, improved. And video games, I think, when you talk about young people today, are very popular. And it turned out that some of those results were very specific to particular video games, in particular the ones that are first-person shoot-em-up Doom-type games. But still, I think that these sorts of experiences may have a training effect, that people can learn to become good multitaskers if they engage in activities that lend themselves to multitasking.
All right, let's take a call from Hannah, who is calling from Madison, Connecticut. Hi, Hannah.
Hi. I'm at work right now, and I'm listening to your show, and I'm on the phone, and I'm doing homework at the same time. And I just wanted to say that I'm 19 years old, and I think my generation is particularly good at multitasking because we've grown up with technology our whole lives. And personally, I get bored if I'm only doing one thing at once. I do the crossword puzzle. I watch a movie. You know, everything.
Yeah.
I'll take a moment to say that the final piece in the series does have to do with multitasking at different ages, and it is sort of interesting. And partly, yes, it does help to have grown up doing, like anything we do with our brain, we get better at it if we do a lot of it. But there's something else going on, which is that it appears that the best multitaskers are about in the college age group. College age, and there is where our multitasking ability peaks. Children are not good multitaskers. If you ever watch a child in a busy classroom with a truck in front of them, their entire attention is devoted to that truck. They are virtually unaware of everything going on around them. They are not good for that reason. And older people have exactly the opposite problem. It becomes harder and harder as we get older to shut out all of the distractions, both internal distractions in our mind and external distractions around us. So about at that age, somewhere, 19, 25, somewhere in there is when we are absolutely at our peak.
Interesting. And the other thing, thanks so much for your call, Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. And I also, something that I've been thinking about as this show's been going on, and I know everybody who is emailing and calling in is sort of having the same awareness of what they're doing at this moment. And, I'm very aware of the way that I'm multitasking right now as I do the program, reading emails, trying to get ready for the next call, or listening to you guys. On the other hand, I like nothing better than, for instance, in my job, to sort of just dig in and listen to the tape I've gotten and really be able to be one-on-one with that kind of task. So I'm wondering if certain things are more easier for you to multitask at, and whereas other things really do require that full-blown attention. Professor?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment also about the age group issue. It is true that younger people around, in their teenage years are certainly getting exposed to all sorts of multitasking situations and that they're good at. It turns out, though, that there is some research, notably by, for example, Art Kramer and his colleagues at the University of Illinois, that shows that if you give older individuals enough practice, that they can actually improve their task switching abilities to the point where they're indistinguishable from those of younger individuals. Now, it turns out that if you strain older adults' cognitive abilities by increasing various other demands of the task, like how many things they have to remember while they're performing it, then that turns out not to be as true. But nonetheless, the idea is that older adults, it's not the case that they can't multitask, that if you give them enough practice, then they certainly can. and you'll have to remind me about
it. Oh, I was just saying that I feel like there's certain situations in which I'm comfortable with the idea of multitasking, others where I really, when it's a big project, where I really want to just be concentrating on one thing.
Well, I think, you know, you're getting at a central issue here, which is how demanding are the two tasks that people are trying to switch back and forth between or trying to divide their attention between? If they're not very demanding, then you can perform them both well, even if you're switching back and forth, or at least accurately. But if one of them really takes all of your attention, then it might be difficult to kind of, you know, stop doing it or put it on hold, because that might result in an error or poor performance. One thing that actually very early researchers like Jerzold in 1927 reported was that it's easier to switch back and forth between two tasks when those tasks involve different stimuli. So for example, if you're switching back and forth between writing an email and talking on your cell phone, that might be easier than switching back and forth between one email and another email, because you might get the two emails confused. And so sometimes the decision about whether to multitask or not depends on how hard the two tasks are, mm-hmm. and also how confusable they are.
Okay. We're going to take a call now from Jerry, and Jerry is calling from Fairfield, Connecticut. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead, Jerry.
I thought your comment about the younger people were better at multitasking than old people. I'm 62 years old. I'm multitasking all the time. In my car, I've got a laptop that I have to review information. I'm a claims adjuster for an insurance company right now. Before that, I was a police officer for some years. And the last part of my career in law enforcement, we had a laptop and a police car for computer-aided dispatch that we had to deal with.
Now, wait, are you driving and working on your laptop at the same time? I mean, you're not, like, stopping driving and then working on your laptop.
Well, we're supposed to pull over and stop, but it's easy enough to look at the screen and deal with stuff as you're driving down the road.
All right, I think you've shocked John Hamilton altogether. John?
I'm a little worried. but your point is well taken, is that people who have spent a career doing this are clearly better at it than people who haven't. I think the question is knowing when you're giving up something and what that thing is and how dangerous it is the key for all of us.
Well, sure it is. I mean, yeah, you can do it cautiously. And so far I've been lucky and everything's been okay with it. But yeah, we multitask even the older people do.
I think
a lot of it has to do with because I've been doing it for probably 25 years.
Right. Which is, thanks so much for calling, Jerry, and
be careful
on the road, please.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Okay. Oh, yeah, he says. Good idea, Professor Weissman, to be working on your laptop while you're driving a car.
Well, I wouldn't advocate that. I think that's a more extreme version of some of the cell phone studies we were discussing earlier, where, you know, even talking on a cell phone hands-free, you know, you're not holding it, you're just talking into a microphone, that is very disruptive for attending to the road ahead of you. And if you then actually start looking down at a laptop screen, well, then you're not even looking, I suppose, at the road ahead of you. And so I wouldn't encourage that.
All right, let's take another call. We're going to go to Mary in Vacaville, California. Hi, Mary.
Oh, yeah, hi. Your discussion just made me think about something that's been puzzling me. I score well on memory tests. I've checked myself several times. I was concerned because my memory seems weak, and now I'm thinking from your show that it's because of multitasking, which seems to force my mind into a RAM-like functioning short-term memory, which is great, but fails me later when I try to recall what I did, what I heard, if I really made that appointment or canceled it. I do so many things on automatic pilot kind of way. It's not so efficient in that case, as I often have to double-check things.
John Hamilton, is there any?
Well, I think what you may be talking about there is closely related to some of the studies they've done on multitasking and learning. And a lot of learning, of course, has to do with moving things from short-term memory into long-term memory. And multitasking seems to disrupt that. Perhaps Dr. Weissman would care to elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, oftentimes, when we're trying to multitask, what we're doing is effectively not paying as much attention as we could be to any particular task. And it turns out that there's a lot of work indicating that we tend to remember what we attend. And so oftentimes, as well, we remember things that we encode in all sorts of different ways. So you can remember me by my voice, you can remember me by my face, you can remember me by the fact that I told you I played the trombone. There's a lot of individual things you can associate with me to help yourself remember me. And when we're not paying attention well, it turns out that these sorts of more elaborated processing that lead to better memory are less likely to happen, right? Because we're not paying full attention, and therefore we spend less time encoding whatever it is we're attending at the moment. And so it becomes less durable and more susceptible to forgetting.
And I think we can rely on sometimes our automatic pilot too much. So, for example, I'm so used to taking a certain route every Monday through Friday, so there I am Saturday or Sunday going down the road, and I take the turn that really is not where I'm going at all. So,
all right. Well, thanks so much for your call, Mary.
You're welcome.
Okay. I hope that we answered your question. And I just want to remind our audience that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And if you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. We're going to take a call now from Jody in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Jody.
Yes, hi. I am a multitasker. I actually believe that women were made to multitask. I think that we are created that way, and I have even created a website called multitaskermom.com to help support women in doing this. I don't think we could have kids without multitasking.
So is there a gender difference, John Hamilton? I mean, are women better at multitasking?
There certainly is a perception that there is. And, in fact, I asked several neuroscientists about this in the course of doing the study. And the best answer I got was that when you actually start testing, it's not obvious that there's a great gender advantage. However, there was a little bit of research that suggested that maybe what's going on is that women are a lot more tolerant of doing multitasking than men are. Men will simply refuse to, whereas the women will go ahead and try to accommodate all these different tasks, and perhaps that's what's going on.
Because we have no other option. We can't refuse when we're taking care of our children, running our home, at full-time jobs. There's really no other option there, and I think if it's not natural in us, then we've learned to do it quite well because there are millions of us out there doing it every day as results from my multitaskermom.com website where we're all supporting each other in this.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your call, Jody.
Thank you.
Professor Weissman, I just want to, obviously everybody is multitasking, but the research is saying that it's really not such a good idea. So I keep trying to figure out what where to go with that.
Well, one thing that sort of strikes me a little bit about the last caller's statement is that, there's a lot of research showing that the strategies people use when they're trying to coordinate multiple tasks are really critical to determining how successful they are. So for a long time, there was work by Hal Pashler and his colleagues showing that it wasn't really possible to, at the same time, program two different responses. That is, if you had to make a decision about what you were seeing at one moment, and then I presented the subject with another stimulus that they had to make a decision about very soon thereafter, there seemed to be this bottleneck wherein, essentially, the second decision had to wait until the first decision was finished. But subsequent researchers like Dave Meyer at the University of Michigan were able to show that depending on how subjects were instructed to coordinate these two tasks, that sort of bottleneck in response selection could either be present or absent. And what this makes me think about with respect to men and women and gender differences in multitasking is that men and women may have very different strategies and approaches that they use when they're trying to coordinate different tasks. And so if in one study it turned out to be the case that women were better than men, or if in another study it turned out to be the case that men were better than women, it might just be that they're using different strategies. And what would really be interesting for future research, I think, is to try to understand whether these gender differences are due to something hardwired about men and women, men's and women's brains that just can't change, so that women can do something and, for example, men can't, or if it's just that women do something and men don't, even if they could, if they were encouraged to adopt a different strategy. And I think that a lot of research that goes on needs to or would be better if it focused on these various strategies that people use to perform these different tasks.
I have to end with this email, which came in earlier, actually, from Brian in South Africa. You just lost a listener. I'm working on a project and listening to NPR as I always do, but you convinced me that multitasking is bad for my brain, so I've turned you off. Surely an unintended consequence. And John Hamilton, maybe briefly you can tell us what your final segment's going to be on in your series on multitasking.
The final segment is going to be looking at multitasking at different ages. So we look at kids, we look at college age people, and we look at elderly people and how they handle it in their brain and how good they are at it.
All right. John Hamilton is a science correspondent for NPR. Daniel Weissman also joined us. He's a professor of cognition and perception at the University of Michigan. Coming up, Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson will join us. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.